Support for this podcast comes from the Fletcher School of Global Affairs at Tufts University. To start your future as a global changemaker, you must have context across fields like international business, cybersecurity, energy policy, and more. Don't just study global affairs, shape them. Visit fletcher.tufts.edu.
This is Radio Boston. I'm Anthony Brooks.
And I'm Meghna Chakrabarty. This week, presidential politics took a major turn in the race for 2012, with many candidates swinging through the Granite State to Stump and Gladhand.
Including newly declared presidential hopeful Texas Governor Rick Perry.
You have the best economy in New England. To make it even better, I would suggest you override the veto of the governor so that you become a right-to-work state.
New Hampshire presidential politics, part of our regular week in review. Also this week, Elizabeth Warren continued her exploration of a Senate bid.
And the Obama administration announced a change in immigration policy, reprieves for thousands of immigrants facing deportation, and a new focus on convicted criminals.
And Evergreen Solar files for bankruptcy while Bank of America announced huge layoffs.
So joining us now to review the week's big stories is Boston Globe columnist Joan Vinaki. Great as always to have you, Joan. Thanks for joining us.
Nice to be here.
And James Pindle, political director at WMUR in Manchester. Welcome back, James. Glad to have you as well.
Great to be back on.
And James, let's start with you. Sort of busy up there suddenly on the presidential path. Give us your take on what happened up there. Particularly, I'm interested in Texas Governor Rick Perry. How do you think his debut emerged there in New Hampshire?
Well, many of us up here who really watch this primary are just waiting for it to really just begin. If you go back to 2008, of course, it was almost an anomaly because it was so exciting for so many reasons. But even 2004 and even 2000, this primary had been kicked off with television ads and town hall meetings and just candidates out there getting out on the hustings. But we really haven't seen that. We've just had one candidate, Mitt Romney, be the sort of front runner by default is what I call him, because there's no one else even in the same league. But that changed this week when Rick Perry came into this race. Clearly, Rick Perry, as the Boston Herald put it this week, has the trifecta of a jobs record and ability to raise money and some credibility with the Tea Party. And you've really seen Mitt Romney now come out and almost be awakened to have a lot more of events. There's no one's talking about the mittness protection program where you just kind of put him in a cocoon and made sure so he wasn't able to mess up. He's been out here on the trail up in the North Country, town hall meetings everywhere else, announcing endorsements. He's really kick-started, but Rick Perry had the buzz through much of this week. It's been sort of a mixed review, but he has been out there hitting the trail. And
well,
for someone like Michelle Bachmann, who's been basically ignoring the state since she announced here that she's going to come out and campaign, she hasn't been here in weeks. And those Bachmann people that I talk to, they're looking at Rick Perry and they're very interested.
Well, Joan, I want to get your response to this, but first let's listen to Jerry DeLamis. He's of Rochester, New Hampshire, talking about Rick Perry's entrance into the race. Let's listen.
I think he checked all the boxes, you know, and he's certainly presidential looking. He speaks well. I think Mitt's going to, when he sees this, and here's what he has to say, is going to probably make him a little bit nervous.
So that was Mitt's going to be a little bit nervous. What do you think, Joan Vinaki, about what you see and what Rick Perry does to the Mitt Romney factor up there?
Well, I agree with James. The first thing that Rick Perry did was kind of totally eclipse Michelle Bachmann, who, you know, a week ago was all the excitement was that she'd won some kind of straw poll out in Iowa, and nobody's talking about that anymore. I went to the Politics and Eggs breakfast where Perry spoke to a group of basically business people. And, I mean, he brought a drawl, he brought a crispness, he brought a Texas two-step to the right. I think, you know, at first blush, he does have to make Romney, you know, stand up and take notice. He wore a suit, he wore a tie, and I'm wondering how long it'll take before Romney, you know, ditches those khakis.
Well, James Pindle, he certainly has a message of low taxes, low rolling back regulations. He's got an economic record to run on. Whether he's responsible for the, you know, he alone responsible for the economic record in Texas, it's a subject of debate. But is it a message that plays well among New Hampshire conservatives?
Look, those conservatives who have just problems with Mitt Romney, and there are a lot of them there, They have not had a candidate. They flirted with different people, from even Herman Cain in the spring to Michelle Bachmann. Some, of course, really love Ron Paul in the state, which you have to mention. But for those other people who just aren't comfortable, just don't think Mitt Romney can get elected, now they have another option. And Rick Perry, of course, comes into this race with, you mentioned, the right message about jobs that, for Republicans, I mean, yes, you have to check the boxes as the person you had Jerry DeLimas on, which your listeners probably don't know, is, my opinion, the Tea Party leader in this state. So that's an interesting quote. But you also have Republicans here, three-quarters of them say, in a recent poll, say the most important thing they want in a Republican candidate is someone who can beat Barack Obama. And, you know, if jobs is something that Rick Perry can mention, he can not, if he doesn't mess up on the trail, which he may well do, he's going to be a very viable candidate.
Well, speaking of possibly messing up on the trail, Perry did cause a bit of a kerfuffle this week when he had this to say about Fed Chief Ben Bernanke.
If this guy prints more money between now and the election, I don't know what y'all would do to him in Iowa, but we would treat him pretty ugly down in Texas. I mean, printing more money to play politics at this particular time in American history is almost treacherous, or treasonous, in my opinion.
Treasonous. That's Rick Perry. Of course, that was him speaking in Iowa. But what do you think, Joan? Treasonous, that's a pretty serious accusation. What do you make of this? And does it suggest that maybe the advanced billing of Rick Perry might be contradicted a little bit by the realities of the campaign trail?
Well, he backed down a bit from that at the Politics and Eggs breakfast. And that's, you know, he clearly, you know, he is beginning to understand, if he didn't understand already, that when you run for president and you hit New Hampshire, every word you say counts. I mean, it didn't take long for Karl Rove, who was behind the scenes with Romney, to call that unpresidential, and that talking point was picked up. Yeah, I mean, he's going to be a work in progress, and I think people will be looking to see, you know, can he keep the rhetoric in check? You know, swagger is great, but if you go overboard, you get into trouble.
Well, here's Texas Congressman Ron Paul reacting in New Hampshire to Rick Perry's comments on Bernanke. Let's listen.
He realizes that talking about the Fed is good, too. But I'll tell you what, he makes me look like a moderate. I mean, I have never once said Bernanke has committed treason. But I have suggested very strongly that the Federal Reserve System and all their members have been counterfeiters for a long time.
James Spindle, I want to ask you about Ron Paul. What's the response been to Ron Paul up in New Hampshire? You mentioned him earlier, the darling of some conservatives. Where's he stand these days?
Look, he's in a very good position in this state. And we don't, locally, we talk about it a lot. I don't think he gets the national coverage he quite deserves. I mean, obviously, he narrowly lost the Iowa straw poll, but in New Hampshire, look, the guy is constantly going to get 9 to 10 to 12%. When he opened his New Hampshire office this week, where he took those remarks, 400 people turned up, which is more than anyone else could draw a crowd to do in this state. The question for him is, can he somehow, and the campaign knows this, they've been talking about it, can they somehow make him more of a mainstream candidate? He certainly has his appeal with a certain segment. Can he now go the next step? You know, he announced he's not going to run for Congress again. This is it. This is his last shot, and they're going to try to go for it. But he's got to make a way to make that message appeal to other people. And as we discussed before, with a lot of folks, the Republican Party, 75% saying they want someone who can beat Barack Obama, Ron Paul is not the first name that comes to mind when they think of that.
We're talking about the big news stories this week with James Spindle, political director at WMUR in Manchester, and Joan Vinaki of the Boston Globe. And Joan and James, let's move on to another story. Elizabeth Warren moved closer to a Senate run this week, by all appearances. She's formed an exploratory committee, and she quickly drew the attention of the Republican establishment. Brian Walsh, the spokesman for the National Republican Senatorial Committee, called her both an Oklahoman, which I guess isn't very good if you're running for Senate in Massachusetts, and an ivory tower elitist, which I guess also is not good. And as to her listening to her, she was on this week, he said, quote, if she's really listening, she'll hear that her plans for higher taxes and more Washington spending will kill jobs. So, Joan, seems like Elizabeth Warren has gathered the attention of the Republicans.
I would take that as a sign of respect. I haven't seen them that agitated over any of the other Democrats who have already announced that they're in the race. And I do think, and I use the word, you know, work in progress, I think, you know, that's what we're going to see with Elizabeth Warren as well. On paper, she has some really strong credentials that make her, you know, again on paper, an interesting and potentially strong candidate for the Democrats. She has to win a primary, and then if she wins the primary, she has to, of course, go up against Scott Brown. And she has to show that she's good at retail politics. And, you know, recent history, I mean, Charlie Baker running for governor the last time out in Massachusetts looked really good on paper. He had never run for office before, and or statewide office, and on the campaign trail, he didn't measure up to what was on paper. So I think that the jury is out on that for her as well.
Well, it's certainly going to be interesting to watch. James Pindle, what are you interested to see as we watch Elizabeth Warren sort of dip her toe into a statewide campaign here in Massachusetts?
Of course, Joan's right. I mean, she is a great candidate in theory. She's a first-time candidate. We'll see what kind of candidate she is going to be in reality. And even though she's been going on this listening tour all week, and she's certainly been trying to show that she's going to know exactly where Fenway Park is, even though Martha Coakley did not, the reality is that she's going to be going up against the most popular politician in Massachusetts with Scott Brown, one who has a lot of money. So I think the takeaway from all this is we finally have a real interesting, exciting race, and Massachusetts is going to be the center for a lot of political activity of this going to be looking around for the rest of the country.
Hmm. Well, let's move on now to the news to news today that the Obama administration has announced it will only pursue deporting criminals for the time being. Undocumented immigrants will be granted an indefinite reprieve as the government reviews some 300,000 cases currently in the court system. Joan, what do you make of this?
Well, I think that it looks like a calculation, like a fairly obvious calculation,
yeah.
That President Obama is, as he, like moves forward in campaign mode, is going to take steps to secure his base to the left. And he, you know, was getting a lot of complaints and gripes about his immigration policy, actually that he was deporting. More people were being deported under his administration than under the Bush administration.
And that so many of them were being deported for not very serious crimes, misdemeanor, a lot of them
so
for misdemeanors.
So he's trying to sort of strike that balance where he, you know, appeals to the base, but also, tries to send out the right policy vibes that he's, you know, going to deport the criminals, the bad guys.
Mm. And James, on the campaign trail, how do you think this plays for him?
Well, this is a general election issue. It's something to watch, not just in the presidential race, but as we just mentioned, in the Massachusetts Senate race. This is a major. I mean, everyone who's running for president on the Republican side largely going to disagree with this. But it also, of course, speaks to the idea that we have not had comprehensive immigration reform under President Bush, or even that one moment we thought it was going to happen with President Obama, say in the summer of 2009. It just never happened. So this is going to be definitely a general election conversation that we're going to be having.
Well, it's going to be an interesting one to follow, to be sure. Well, Obama stepped off the campaign trail yesterday and onto the island of Martha's Vineyard for some rest and relaxation. But before he did, he was pushing a message about jobs and how he's trying to turn around the country's economy. And the White House put that message to music in this political ad.
The prime driver of economic growth and jobs is going to be our people and the private sector and our businesses. But you know what? Government can help.
Government can help, cheery music and all. Maybe not so cheery here in Massachusetts, where there was news this week about Evergreen Solar, the Massachusetts company the state government invested heavily in hopes that it would hoping that it would create jobs. This week, Evergreen filed for bankruptcy. Joan, Evergreen Solar has been limping along all year. It was once prized by the administration of Deval Patrick. And given tens of millions of dollars in tax breaks and subsidies, do you think Evergreen's bankruptcy is going to make it difficult for the Patrick administration to invest in businesses like this in the future?
Well, I've never been a big fan of these subsidies to companies. It's really hard to pick winners, and in the end, the global economy always wins out over whatever a state can offer. And you know, I think they made a bad choice with this company, and they lost a lot of credibility with it, and I think it does hurt the Patrick administration.
Hmm. James Pindle, what do you think? Doesn't the state have some role in investing in individual businesses, or at least in sort of broad sectors of industry to try to propel them along?
Well, that's a political statement. I'm not sure about that, but that's obviously, look, we're having this whole conversation about the role of government and the role of jobs.
Sure.
This is one of these examples where it plays out. How's that for an answer?
At least if they're going to, you know, give a package like this to a company, they have to have, you know, the better clawback provisions. So if things don't go as planned,
right.
You know, in this case, it was a $58 million package, and, you know, Evergreen ended up with most of it, I believe. The state really has to be much better at crafting a package for company.
Hmm. Meanwhile, the Massachusetts unemployment rate remained at 7.6%, still well below the national average. But it was followed by news today that Bank of America is cutting at least 3,500 jobs across the country. James, Bank of America, a big U.S. company, it's obviously in a bad way. If huge institutions like this continue to struggle, what do you think it says about where we are in terms of the overall economy?
Look, obviously there are a lot of fears, and particularly what happening on Wall Street just this past 7 days of all the topsy-turvy news that is big headline grabbing like this does not help. Even if the Dow rallies, consumer confidence has been hurt, and headlines like this do not help investors at all feel better, or Americans feel better about the situation. And, you know, we're always having this conversation about, are we on the next recession? And a conversation like this is not going to be helpful.
Mm. Yeah.
And politically, it's going to take a lot more than one of those music videos to make people feel that the president is doing the right thing. One other thing I noticed in that story of Bank of America, the CEO says it's tough to manage through a restructuring. I'd like once to see one of those guys offer to take a pay cut while they manage through restructuring, which means laying off thousands of people.
Let me just touch on one last story very quickly this week. This week, Boston firefighter Albert Arroyo was acquitted of mail fraud charges. This is the firefighter, you will recall, who had filed for disability, and then it was discovered that he was moonlighting as a bodybuilder. So he's been acquitted. What do you think, Joan? Do you think that Attorney General Martha Coakley's office is going to be nervous to pursue fraud charges in the future like this?
Well, wasn't it a federal trial?
Was it a federal trial? I thought it was a state charge, but I may be wrong about that.
Well, you know, at first, you know, I like everyone else, I was outraged because here we had the video of him lifting weights, and it was hard to imagine how anybody could find him not guilty. But I did read a story that sort of laid out the reasoning of the jury, and they said that the charge of mail fraud, you know, that the prosecutors had just not made the case. So maybe it's just a matter of being more careful about what you charge someone with. Fraud alone might have done it.
Yeah, and I just want to make the point, Joan, your question was absolutely to the point. This was a federal case, so my apologies for getting that wrong. Well, let's move on now to our weekly hubbub, that one story that didn't necessarily rise to the top of the news cycle but might have caught your attention. And let me ask Meghna for your hubbub.
So just to take us back momentarily to presidential politics, you know, we always cover the latest polling results and everything. I know Joan and James, you're both on top of that. But I would say that the real way to understand what's on the minds of the American people is something entirely different, and that is the collective hive mind of Google. Because, you know how when you type in a Google search term, it sort of pops up a list of other related search terms you might be looking for? So if I'm like, typing Joan Vinacchia, might see awesome columnist, insightful, etc. Well, it turns out that Slate did an investigation into what you get when you type in the presidential GOP candidates' names. So apparently when you type in Rick Perry, Google spits out a bunch of other search terms, which are what thousands of other Americans are looking up, and you get Rick Perry wife, Rick Perry gun, Rick Perry hair. And for Michelle Bachmann, it yields hot, husband, bikini, and crazy. And just to look on the other side of the aisle, when Americans search for Barack Obama, Google spits out Twitter, biography and birth certificate. So those are apparently the things that still matter to voters in the United States.
All right, James Pindle, let me come to you for your hubbub this week.
Well, up in New Hampshire, we not only have been wondering why there are bats invading our Board of Selectmen meetings up in Epping, but this is where we're at, not firefighters and federal trials. We're at bats. But the other thing is we have a bit of a hubbub with our state Republican chairman. There's a move to create a coup. There's a lot of different reasons why, but the basic premise is he's a Tea Party guy. They've had a lot of problems winning special elections, in fact, being crushed in them. Had a lot of problems with fundraising, and the establishment is now fighting back, and there's moves to remove him. The largest paper in the state, a conservative newspaper, the union leader called on him to resign today. This is all inside baseball, but this matters because we're just 6 months away from the New Hampshire primary when all eyes are going to be on the nation. Who's going to be leading this party? I don't know.
Very, very interesting. Joan Vinocchi, let me come to you with your hubbub.
Well, first I'd like to say that I don't want to know what comes up when my name is Googled.
I'm sure it's all good, Joan.
I don't think so. There was a small item inside the paper today about Sal DeMacy, the former Speaker of the House who was convicted and a variety of political corruption charges back in June, that his law license will be suspended on September 9th, and that's a day after his sentencing. And I guess I had two thoughts. You know, he's edging back into the news. The return of Whitey Bulger had completely put DeMacy on the back burner after he just, like, was, you know, taken over page one at the Boston Globe. And I'm thinking that, you know, Sal is probably wishing he had a jury like the one that Albert Arroyo, the firefighter, had. And that he just was not that lucky, and that, you know, his day of reckoning is approaching. It'll be interesting to see how that one plays out.
Well, it will be interesting to watch that. So here's my hubbub. It involves Shaquille O'Neal, great basketball player and former Celtic, we can say, and how President Obama hurt Rajon Rondo's feelings, according to Shaq's new book, which is coming out in a little while. And we have a little excerpt here. So this is what happened in early March. Some of the guys went to the Museum of Fine Arts for a fundraiser and got to hang out with President Barack Obama. Everyone was a little bit in awe. The president turns to Ray, that's Ray Allen, and then points at Rondo and says, "Hey, Ray, why don't you teach the kid how to shoot?" So everyone starts laughing. And according to Shaq, Garnett tells him that he saw a look on Rondo's face, and the kid was devastated, embarrassed, dissed by the president, even though I'm sure Obama didn't mean any harm. But the next day, Rondo shot the ball horribly from the floor. He stopped taking shots after that. He's so sensitive, I think it was a real jolt to hear the outside perception of a basketball fan who happens to be the president of the United States. It messed with his mind, I'm sure of it. That from Shaquille O'Neal, talking about how Obama apparently hurt the feelings of Rondo. So there you have it, folks.
By the way, Joan, I just looked you up. When I Google you, I get bio, biography, and Wikipedia. So very innocuous.
So far.
You're safe.
Don't go to the next level.
Joan Vinocchi, thanks so much for joining us today. We appreciate it.
Nice to be here. Thanks.
That's Joan Vinocchi, Boston Globe columnist, and James Pindle, political director at WMUR in Manchester. Always a pleasure to have you as well. Thank you so much.
Thank you.
Well, when we come back, we're going caterpillar hunting.
It's tougher than you think because some of the little critters are masters of disguise.
You called it a bird poop mimic?
Yeah, absolutely. This is a bird dropping mimic.
Bird dropping mimic. A little more scientific about
it. The Children's Museum has been trying to get us to say poop a lot. They seem to like that. So.
Stay with us. I'm Anthony Brooks.
And I'm Meghna Chakrabarty. This is Radio Boston.